everybody. It's Pam Nguyen with the Divorced Parent Telesummit. I'm here with Shelley Greaser, my co-host, and Rosalind Sadaka, who is an author and creator of Child-Centered Divorce. You may remember Rosalind from our Telesummit last fall, and she agreed to join us this evening for our kickoff call. We're going to start a new round of the Divorced Parent Telesummit. I think it's in 2 weeks. March 12th will be the first night. So welcome, Shelley and Rosalind.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
And we have some listeners on the line, so if you have any questions, you can type them into the box. Or if you want, if we have time at the end, we can open the lines. You can just press star 2, and that will let us know that you have a question. Okay, well, let's get started. So, Rosalind, why don't you just start off by reminding our listeners, I think on the Telesummit you had sort of 5 questions to ask yourself. And maybe you could just start by explaining a little bit about the concept behind child-centered divorce, and we'll kind of move on from there.
Okay. Well, child-centered divorce evolved out of my own personal experience with divorce. More than 15 years ago, my son was 11 years old, and I was traumatized by the thought of how to break the news to him. He was very close to his dad as well as to me, and I knew that the divorce was going to be very hurtful for him. And I stayed awake for weeks of sleepless nights trying to figure out a good way of telling him. And there was nothing out there. There are books that tell you what to say, but nothing really tells you how to do it. And finally, I came up with an idea at 4 o'clock in the morning one night, and I put it together, and it turned out to be a really successful tool for me in explaining the divorce to my son, and ultimately it helped pave the way for successful co-parenting with my ex and I, and my son is now a grown young man. And what I did is thought that I would share the concept with other people since I'm a writer by profession, but I literally sat on the idea for 15 years before I finally wrote the book and got it out there. And what makes it different, and the book is How Do I Tell the Kids About the Divorce, a Create a Storybook Guide to Preparing Your Children with Love. What's different about this book is that I created fill-in-the-blank templates for parents to tell their own personal story, but I provide most of the content and details and breaking the news to your children. And you customize the templates and put it into a storybook format, a photo album or a scrapbook, and then you present it to the children at the time you're having this really tough conversation. And it serves two purposes. It becomes a script for the parents so that you don't forget any crucial message when you're breaking the news to the children. It keeps you on track, and it also is something that the children can read over and over again in the weeks and months to follow to remind them of the key messages that are so important. And mixed with the text are family photos, so that it really is a storybook, and children are looking at the story of their family with their parents and their siblings. And it starts the family on the right page, knowing that life is going to go on and continue. We will always be a family. Mom and Dad will always be our mom and dad and will always love us no matter what changes happen. And this is about change, not about blame. So it gets parents on the same page to understand the valuable principles of co-parenting without laying an emotional turmoil and psychological havoc on the children. And that ultimately became the foundation of my child-centered divorce network, helping parents understand that they have an effect on the way their children react to the divorce And there are choices they can make, and some are better than others, and we want to guide them into making the best possible decisions to create the best possible outcome for everyone in the family.
That's great, Rosalind, a good synopsis of the whole point of your site and just how important it really is to, you know, keep the kids in the center and to keep that focus on what's best for them and not, you know, getting caught up in the conflict between the parents. So do we want to, Pam, were you getting ready to say something?
I was actually going to say that I love that you can personalize that book, and I went ahead and put it up on the replay page or the webcast page that people might be on right now. I put links to three different products that Rosalind has, not just the How Can I Tell the Kids About Divorce, but also the audio coaching program for child-centered divorce, which is a little bit longer program. And then you've also sort of moved into a new area now. And with the telesummit, this time we're going to be covering a variety of issues facing divorced parents, from money and credit to dating and remarriage to strategies and tools to help ease common parenting challenges like bedtime and homework. And one of the products, Roz, that you have recently launched is Dating After Divorce.
Yes.
Is it a book?
It's several products. It's a book, 99 Things Women Wish They Knew Before Dating After 40, 50, and yes, 60. So many people who are divorced and then get out in the dating world again are over 40. And life is vastly different than when you were dating in your 20s. So this is a book that focuses on picking up the pieces and answers crucial questions, especially about personal empowerment, because wise women understand that dating isn't about learning how to flirt and learning pick-up lines and learning what to say to do or go where to go. It's more of an inside job, and it's about the level of self-confidence you have, the self-esteem you have, the energy you put forth, the belief you have in yourself that makes you desirable or not, and attracts the consciousness of the partner that you're attracting. And so this is a book which was co-authored with my sister, Amy Sherman, who's a therapist, and together we put together a really excellent, quick and easy read of 99 things you wish you knew before starting dating that'll make a big impact in helping you accelerate your success and your enjoyment of the dating process. And then we put that information into a 10-week e-course, which is called Dating Rescue, and that's for women of all ages, because whether you're 25 or you're 75, certain things are universal for women. And so these are weekly chapters, weekly modules about different facets of dating that takes you everywhere from where to go and your appearance to coping with challenges of finding someone valuable, knowing when you have a keeper, dealing with sexual issues and intimacy, trusting your antenna when you find someone who may be abusive on some level, and a multitude of other factors. So that Dating Rescue is a course. And then we also have Create Your Ideal Relationship course, which is a number of products all put together, including the book, that give women over 40 a handle on understanding all of the dynamics, again, with a strong emphasis on emotional and psychological well-being, so that you really feel that you're worthy of attracting a healthier relationship than the one you got out of in the past.
So, Roslyn, I just want to clarify. So all of these products, are they just for women?
Yes. They're just
okay,
for women.
So they're really geared.
Yes. My sister and her practice is focused on women's issues. That's the coaching that I've been doing all these years, and that's what we know and love. A lot of men do purchase the products because they get great insights about what make women
sure.
tick. So it's definitely, you know, there are men who buy it, and I think it's very valuable for men. But our message is to help women, because women, especially as they move on in years, there's a tendency to feel very insecure. You start comparing yourself with other women, and you get this thing about, I'm not as young as, I'm not as pretty as, I'm not as thin as, I'm not as smart as. And we do such damage to ourselves. And when you get out in the dating world and you're not projecting self-confidence and a real love of yourself, it's very easy for you to attract an abusive, controlling man. It's easy to not attract someone because you appear too needy or desperate. And that's when you get into trouble. And it has nothing to do with your looks or how much you weigh. It really is an inside job. So, yes, there's a lot of tips and insights that we could all pick up on as far as dating skills and dressing well and finding people in the right places. But it's so important to understand that if you're not coming from the inside out and exuding that self-esteem, you're going to be doing yourself an injustice. And you're also not going to find a person who's also working on themselves, because you want a partner who feels the same way, who has confidence, who isn't abusive, who isn't bullying and controlling and exploitive. And those are usually people who also have done inner work, gotten out of relationships, understand the lessons from the past, and are moving ahead in a better, healthier state of mind.
That's a great point, too, because you certainly, you don't want to repeat the same mistakes. And something like 60% of us will end up remarried at some point. And so certainly I think we all want to move forward and not repeat those same and make the same mistakes and have the same issues.
It's a terrible problem. When that happens, it really is, and that's why the success rate for second, third, and fourth marriages every time around the percentage goes down, because what people do is they don't look back on the divorce and say, what can I learn from this? How can I be a better person? What gift did I get out of that experience? No matter how painful a divorce is, you can look for the nuggets of value for yourself, and I call them gifts. They're lessons, insights, truths about ourselves. And if we apply those, we're not going to marry or date the same person over and over again. We're going to find a partner who is more evolved as we're more evolved. But if we don't, then we bring a lot of old baggage with us into relationships, and it is very painful to see the consequences. Because you're going to be marrying a different person with a different face but the same personality traits, and you're going to get right back into the old drama. And so if you're not learning those lessons, you're really doing yourself an injustice.
So, Roslyn, for people that might be out there, maybe they've been divorced, you know, for a while, and they're just now starting to think that they might be ready. What advice do you have for people as far as knowing when they are ready?
Yes. A good way of knowing is asking yourself some questions. Have I let go of the past, and have I released the old hurts, the old attachments, the judgments, the fears, the anxieties from my past, whether it's from my former partner or just from the anxiety about being in that old relationship? If you're still stuck in the old drama, if you're still filled with anger and resentment, then emotionally you haven't detached. And it isn't safe to move on in that state. You're better off going seeing a therapist, a counselor, a coach, a group, someone who could help you with that process of getting rid of old baggage. Because when two people enter a relationship and they're carrying that old baggage, it interferes with moving ahead, no matter how wonderful the two people are. It's like being in bed with three or four or five other people with you, because those skeletons are there, the ghosts of the old relationships are there. So if you're feeling clean and clear, if you're feeling like you've learned what you needed to learn and you can move on with a sense of release and a sense of knowing that you are different and changed in some way, and that a belief that you really deserve a new, wonderful, happy relationship, a belief that you'd make a good partner, and that a belief that there is someone wonderful out there for you, all of that is going to help you as you move into the dating world. You don't want to get discouraged the first or second time you have a date with someone who just doesn't turn out to be perfect. You also want to have realistic expectations about relationships. Too many women especially are caught up in what I call fairy tale thinking. We still have the old beliefs from when we were little girls that there's a Prince Charming out there who's going to sweep us away, that there's a perfect fit for us, and that perfect person is going to be out there, and then once I meet him, all the challenges in life will be handled. And that's not the truth. There are many people who could be ideal partners for you. It just depends on who you find and who you're willing to do the work with. Every relationship is going to take work, because interacting and spending a lot of time with any one person is demanding. We all have qualities and personality characteristics that have to integrate with another person. So if you're expecting someone to be perfect and that your relationship's going to be perfect and everything is happy ever after, then you're setting yourself up for deep disappointment. But if you understand that relationships are about growth, and relationships are about compromising, sharing, and bending over backwards because you see the best in that other person and they're seeing the best in you, and you're willing to overlook certain things, then you're going to move ahead in a much happier vein, and you're more likely to find a fulfilling relationship. And remember, especially, that no one can fulfill you, no one can complete you, despite what the movies tell us, and that you can't fix anyone. Don't find raw potential material like you did when you were 18 years old. You want someone who's already fixed and healed and healthy, and you want yourself to be that way too, so that you could move on together in a mature way. It's not your partner's job to make you happy. And if you don't understand that and you expect that, then you're inevitably going to set yourself up for a lot of pain ahead.
I loved one of those recent little Facebook pictures that people post around, and it said that everyone comes with baggage. The trick is to find someone to help you unpack yours.
Yes. Yes, it's wonderful to have a partner, to a shoulder to lean on, and being a shoulder that someone else can lean on. And just understand that every day is a process for the two of you. But you want someone that you share values with. That's very, very important. Too many women are focusing on physical aspects. It's not about height and weight and hair color and the size of the wallet as much as it is in, do you have long-term values and goals that are in sync, that are going to be lasting 5, 10, 15 years ahead? Do you believe in the same things? Are your basic values similar? Are you contradicting one another? Are you both feeling in alignment with what you see in the future, especially when you're starting a second relationship in midlife? If one person wants to travel the world and the other one is a homebody, then you're already starting a relationship with intense conflict. So you want certain things to be in alignment, and then you can compromise on other issues, but certain ones are non-negotiable, and especially things having to do with integrity and honesty and commitment and what you consider a relationship. you know, not on the first or second date, but fairly early on in dating, you want to talk to your potential partner about how they see a relationship. If one of you wants marriage and the other one just wants to live together forever, well, that can be a big issue down the line, and you ought to discuss it and find out early on about those kinds of things. And spiritual religious beliefs can be areas that, when they're not in alignment, can cause a lot of conflict. Values about children. Often the children are teens or adult children in later relationships, and you want to discuss beliefs about how often you're visiting children and grandchildren and connections and all of those kinds of things. Retirement goals and aspirations. So the more that you have in alignment, the smoother the relationship can be in areas just from the beginning, because conflict is inevitably going to be a part of life and there's no way to avoid it. And then that means you also want to have excellent communication skills and problem-solving skills with your partner.
So all of those things that we're learning in co-parenting really end up also being helpful when you're ready to move on and start a new relationship.
Yes, and many people actually become better co-parents after divorce, and that relationship may have been saved if they had learned and understood a lot of the things they learn afterwards. But yes, there's nothing more important in any relationship than communication skills and understanding how to handle conflict, because conflict happens whether it's a parent-teacher meeting or you're a supervisor at work, or whether it's a love relationship with your children or an intimate partner. So mastering the ability to listen, which is one of the hardest things for all of us, understanding that behind every experience in life, people are wanting to be heard and acknowledged. When you feel that your partner is listening to you, even if you don't agree, and they respect you enough to say, I hear what you're saying, you have a right to believe that, it diffuses conflict. So if you can be a good listener and acknowledge your partner and your children and be able to express your emotions and your feelings, too often we make assumptions in life. We assume our partner knows what we mean and what we're saying, and you always hear people saying, they should know this, they should understand that, they should. We have a lot of assumptions about our relationships. Of course she knows I love her, that kind of thing. Well, it isn't true. We can't take those things for granted. So we have to express what we're feeling and say it in a way where we're owning our feelings and emotions and behaviors in a responsible way. And that gives our partner much more opportunity to own their own, because we model for our partners the way we want them to treat us and the way we would like to treat them as well. We become models in what we do. So if we accept abuse from our partners, then they're going to get permission to be abusive. And if we're abusive, then our partners are going to feel that the only way to interact is in abusive ways and more aggressive ways. And then you get into these relationships where people only yell and scream in order to communicate. So from the beginning, you could make agreements. You could make certain boundaries and rules about how you handle conflict. If issues get too heated up, you could agree to stop and have a timeout and talk again in an hour or the next morning. There are parameters that you could have on conversations. You could take turns sharing what you're feeling and expressing it and have the other person mirror back, paraphrase back what you said, and then you do the same thing for your partner. Then both of you feel heard. Believe it or not, about 75% of all communication is a misunderstanding of what the person was really trying to say to begin with, and then we combine them with our own interpretations and beliefs about the situation, and we're walking around in our own heads with erroneous assumptions about one another because we never checked with our partners. And there are so many courses and classes where people can learn communication skills, active listening. They're the same in the parenting courses as they are in the relationship courses. Basically, once you've learned good skills, you can adapt them in any facet of your relationship life because they just work. But if you don't have respect for one another, that's the turning point in a relationship. That's when the relationship sours and becomes unhealable.
So, Roslyn, I just wanted to see if you could address something that I find that I hear a lot with friends and people is the people, like on the, that you mentioned integrity and how important that is. And I think the people that go out, and I'm not saying that this is everybody and this is all of the sites, but a lot of the internet dating sites, that people will present themselves as something that they're not.
Yes.
And then people meet them and are like, wow, they were nothing like their profile or the way they portrayed themselves. And so I'm just wondering if there's like certain red flags to look for, or maybe, you know, maybe people just need to be more in tune with what they're feeling and really seeing. Like, I think it can be easy sometimes to disregard that gut feeling that you might have, especially when you're first getting back into dating. And, you know, you're just, I think even though you have done your work, that there will be some sense of insecurity or tentativeness about, you know, going on that first date or just even getting back out there. And, you know, and I think that for some people you want to believe the best in others. And, you know, and if they put something out there, you want to believe that that's the truth. But in fact, you know, people can really put anything they want out there. And so I don't know.
Yes.
I guess if you have any comments about all of that, I think that could be really helpful.
Yes. You can't be gullible in this world. It's too easy for anyone to be exploited and taken advantage of, and there's so many scams and so much abuse out there. Plus, there's people who just lie and cheat and exaggerate, and they have pictures up, and then when you see them, they're 20 years older and all of those kinds of things. So you do have to be very careful and cautious and proceed very slowly, especially when you're doing internet dating, because you don't know who and what you're finding. And so one thing you said that's so important is trusting your antenna. You really do need to trust that gut feeling that you have, that little voice, because there's something there. And don't disregard it, because the more you disregard it, the louder the voice gets until sometimes it's too late. So you meet in very public places the first few times, and you ask questions, and you get a sense of whether you feel this person is legitimate. And sometimes when they sound too good to be true, it's because they are. And you
mm-hmm.
really have to be careful of how much you reveal about yourself and share about yourself. So it's a slow give-and-take process, and you want to make sure that you're not catching them in lies or areas where there's conflicting statements and information. And if there is, then early on, you may just want to move on out of that relationship. There are wonderful people out there dating online, and there are crazy people out there. So it isn't an easy time for dating, no matter what, but starting in a place where you're taking it slowly and carefully, meeting in public, don't jump into bed and have sex before you're really ready to do that. That is such a mistake for women, because for women there's a whole emotional component that's different than just the physical. So take your time and really get to feel that this is a partner that's worthy of you, and ask a lot of questions, talk and have those dialogues, and listen carefully so that you're getting answers and comparing them with the reality of what your antenna is saying, and see if that person is just earning your trust. It's a balance between being cautious and not being so frightened and skeptical and cynical that you just scare people away because you're like a detective. So there's a happy medium. And you know, many, many people have been successfully married using internet dating. So it works,
right,
as well as a multitude of other things. One thing is that there are a lot of niche dating sites as well as the huge ones, you know, the Match.com, and there's like three or four big, huge ones. And then there's a lot of niche dating sites for people who are into a certain sport or people who have a certain spiritual or religious affiliation or people who are animal lovers or sports car lovers or you name it, it's out there. And it may be good to try some of those smaller niched-in sites where you know you're finding someone. If you know you like riding horses, then these are people who also ride horses, and you have those commonalities as a starting ground, and it might be easier than just going into the huge pool. It depends. You know, it depends on how strongly you feel about various things. Know and believe in yourself, and then put your profile together with integrity and honesty, and then you'll have to see what happens on the other side with what you get. But no one will be disappointed when they find you, because you're going to be what you say you are. And talk about things that matter. You know, walks on the beach doesn't say anything about either one of you, really. So talk about qualities, and when you do email one another or have those initial phone conversations, talk about some of the things that really do interest you and get to see what those answers are with the other person. So you're interviewing them because you don't want to be wasting your time. And there's nothing wrong with asking some questions. You don't want to get into religion and politics and heavy-duty things on the first couple of dates. But you do want to make sure you're qualifying people so that there's enough of interest there, other than that they just happen to be a male or something. You definitely want to have your qualifying factors and certain things like whether they smoke or whether they drink or other things may be a deterrent. And you should have a list of the things that just are big pluses and things that are non-negotiables for you, because that'll be helpful.
And I'm wondering, too, like, how much information do the kids get about, I mean, do you tell them you're going out? Do you only date on the days when the other parent has the kids?
That depends on the age of the kids. But, you know, the one plus about being divorced as a parent and having a co-parent in your life, life is easier because there are days when you know that your children are safely in the hands of that other co-parent, and you can date or socialize or veg out or do whatever you want to do just for you. And it's a very nice, welcome time. So, yes, definitely plan most of your social dates on the times when the children are not with you so that it isn't an issue. And then depending on the age of the children, you'll have to – they may bring up, Ma, are you starting to date, or are you thinking of other men in your life? Teenagers are going to ask different questions than an 8-year-old, but you need appropriate answers. It's very important that you don't bring other partners into your children's life prematurely. Casual dates should not be paraded in and out of the house, because children have very mixed feelings about that. They can feel threatened. Many of them fantasize about mom and dad getting back together again, and this can make them very depressed. Or they may get attached to this new person who's there for 3 or 4 weeks or 3 or 4 months and then suddenly vanishes, and then someone replaces him, and it breaks the heart of many children. So you want to wait until you really know you found a keeper, that you're in a serious enough relationship, and that the children are emotionally ready. I found in my experience that when dad is in the family picture and the children have a good relationship with dad, they feel much less threatened by mom having another date or another relationship partner or even remarrying, because they know that no one is replacing dad in their life. There's just another important person for mom, and they can be happy for mom. But if dad is not in their life and this other person becomes a pseudo dad, then it's much more frightening for them, and children are more intimidated. They're more likely to reject this other person and have behavior problems around him, because suddenly you're replacing dad with someone else. So the quality of the parental relationship will really dictate a lot of what happens regarding how children respond to dates. I know in my own experience, my son was 11 on through the teens while I was dating, and I have since remarried, but all those years that I was single and dating, and he was never threatened by the men that I introduced him to. I had some serious relationships over the next 8 years, because he still had his dad who he was close with. His dad was still I co-parented, we shared custody, and so he saw his dad regularly. And so he became friends with the men in my life. He liked them, and he loves my husband, but no one ever replaced his dad, and he's still close to his dad. But I think it would have been vastly different if he had no relationship with his father, and then he was looking at these other men with an eye of, are they being my dad, comparing them, and it could be very threatening. So every situation is different. But you definitely want to be guided, with good counselors and therapists and people who understand these things, so that you're taking baby steps every step of the way and making sure your children never, ever feel that they're secondary to another relationship, that your attention is more on a relationship than on them, that they're competing for your with another partner or anything along those lines, because that wreaks havoc in any family.
Well, and if you have, like for me, I mean, I've got a son and a daughter, and my daughter's 2 years younger, and so it can be also that some of your kids are ready and some of your kids aren't. And
oh, yeah.
I know that when I had a serious boyfriend, my son was very much okay with it. But my daughter really struggled. And, you know, sometimes she would kind of be okay, but then there were times that she would act out. And for my kids, I think another thing to remember is that, like, my kids were really young. They were 2 and 4 when their dad and I separated. And so they had never really shared me with anybody else. And so when I did date, then they, you know, all of a sudden they were having to share mom, and
yes.
You know, somewhat, I mean, they were still priority, they were still, you know, number one, but just the idea of sharing me, I think my daughter really struggled with that,
Absolutely.
And she did not like
that can be very, very tough on children, depending on their own level of insecurity and a multitude of things going on with them emotionally and psychologically, and at different ages, there's different reactions. So you really have to be very sensitive with all of that, because your children, sometimes they'll hold things in and not share with you, and you don't realize what's going on. Other times they start acting out and demonstrating behavior problems, and saying it's one thing, but it really is a feeling of insecurity or fear of losing mom or of losing dad or something else. And it definitely takes some communication with the children to find out what's going on. And they need constant reassurance. So reminding them how much you love them and that they're the most important things in your life, you can never say that too often to them, because it's very easy for them to start feeling that they're second place, and that's, of course, is devastating for children.
Well, and then there's also that issue of the other person having children. Like in my case, the kids were comparable to the same age, and so I think there was jealousy because there was another there was a daughter that was close, like a year older than my daughter, and she had her and I had a very good relationship. I mean, she really liked my attention and sought it out, and I think that was really hard. So there's just so many aspects to dating and just, you know, so many dynamics. You know, do the kids get along? Do your kids get along with that other person? Do you get along with their kids? And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that.
Well, there's nothing more complex than blended families. It's a very, very complex issue, and so many emotions and psyches are all being thrown together. And it could be that for some it's a positive experience, while at the same time for others a very negative experience, and they're all in the same household having issues. And, yes, jealousy among the children and being forced to suddenly be sisters and brothers with these strangers, and depending, again, on the age and the looks and the personalities and are introverted versus extroverted and what they think of the two adults who are emerging, a very, very complex. So you need to be alert and watching, because there's no game plan and rules that are going to fit every family. But you need to be alert, and as soon as you notice any issues and problems with your kids, immediately get it attended to. If you can do it yourself and talk, or whether you need to bring in professionals, but the earlier on you address it, the quicker it can be resolved. Because children are making assumptions about things, too. Their insecurities are driving their behaviors, and they may be telling themselves things that aren't really the truth at all, but it's the truth for them, and it's their reality. So you need to be very sensitive. Another thing that seems to be universally true with blended families is that the biological parent should be the one who does the disciplining if a family does blend together. Because children will just resent the other person coming in and suddenly being dad and disciplining, as opposed to being a male role model and a friend and someone important in mom's life. But once he starts disciplining like a dad, then there's more danger. So the mom has to take responsibility for disciplining her own kids. Dad has to take responsibility for disciplining his own kids when they're together, and that seems to work more effectively for everyone concerned.
Well, and, Roz, we had a question come in, so I just want to circle around again, because you mentioned, too, how often kids need reassurance. Let me find it now. The question is not so much about dating, but they wanted to know the best methods to share with the children that both parents love them forever, even if one parent is stricter than the other one, because you know how kids can think being strict is not being loved. Let's just talk for a moment about kids and their memories and their perceptions and how often you really do have to reassure them that things are okay.
You can't tell them too much. You don't want to sound like a rote record, but in different ways, if it just naturally comes into conversation, whether you're watching a TV show and there's some point on it where you could bring it up, or whether you're just hugging them goodbye when you drop them off at school or whatever, just reminding them, one, that you love them, two, that they're so important in your life, and remember that kids have a natural tendency to blame themselves for things like a divorce. And they need to be reassured that in no way were they involved or to blame for the divorce, even if the parents were fighting about the kids, which often happens. Mom and dad could be having discipline issues or other kinds of issues around the kids or kids who are having behavior problems. But it's not because of the kids that you're getting a divorce, and they need to be reassured that they're innocent. And also they need to know that this divorce is a permanent thing. Mom and dad can be friends. We hope they can be. And that mom and dad will always be there for you. And the better parents can co-parent together, the happier their kids are. If mom and dad can be at a birthday party, at a special school event or a sports event, or graduations, all the special occasions in life, if mom and dad could both be there as parents, it's very reassuring for the children, and it lets them know that on some level we're still a family and we'll always be a family. Even if other people come in and it gets a little more complicated, we are still a family, and this family can still have love because the love that mom and dad have for the children is forever love. And kids just need to hear that and understand that. And that's the beauty of starting with the book concept, because whatever you write in there is something they could look at again and again, and you could bring it out 6 months later and a year later and say, remember, we told you this, that we'll always be your mom and dad, we'll always love you, and that's the truth. And so you could keep journals with them. You could have conversations where you have a special day with each child separately, and just bonding time with them, intimate time with them, stories at night before bed, always reminding them at the end with a little pet phrase or something that just lets them know how special they are, regardless of all the craziness going on around them, that they are loved, they are innocent, and this will pass. Whatever is frightening for them and creating insecurity for them is going to pass, because we are focusing on love, and our love is going to last forever and ever in our family. And that makes them feel more secure, and that's what they need, to just feel valued and appreciated and loved, and the security of knowing that they still have parents, even if the situation has changed, they can handle things. The most important thing you need to do is never, ever fight in front of the children, and never badmouth mom or dad to one in front of the children. You never want to put down your ex. No matter how frustrating that person may be for you, you don't want to say, oh, your dad is such a jerk, or, you know, you can't trust him. He never comes when he says, because when you do that, the children are undermined. They feel guilty for loving someone that you don't love and that you're putting down, and they feel that if that's how you feel about dad, you may be feeling the same way about me. And it brings up deep insecurities. So whatever gripes you have about your ex, you keep them to yourself and you vent with your friends, but you don't use your children as confidants. You don't have your children be detectives and messages sharing, tell your dad that we have to change things to Tuesday. That's not the place for children. You want to remember that your children deserve to have their childhood, and let them be kids, and you take care of all the adult responsible details yourself.
You know, you saying all of, you said some things that really made me think of some points we might want to mention, and one of them would be that, you know, speaking of the kids and using them as a, you know, somebody to go back and forth, you know, I think for us, or for people that their ex is dating somebody else now, I mean, maybe it's not you that's dating, but maybe your ex is dating somebody, that parents make sure that they don't drill the kids about, you know, well, what's that person like, and what did you do with them, and, you know, just ask them the 20 to 100 questions about that person that, you know,
so
you may
tempting.
Want to, and, but just that parents, you know,
it's so damaging to do that. Don't make your kids be spies. It's very damaging for them, and they understand what's going on. You know, kids are not stupid. They may not be able to explain to you psychologically everything going on, but they're feeling it. They're picking it up, and they understand the tension. They understand the motives on some level, and they, unfortunately, they internalize everything, and they put themselves in the center because that's how they are as children. They're in the center of the universe, and somehow they feel responsible for every little nuance of what's going on in life. So if mom and dad are creating tension, and if mom's asking the kids for details, and the kids are sharing things, and then dad says, don't tell mom we had hot dogs last night, and all of this kind of stuff, it just pressures them. They don't know the right or wrong way to respond. They don't have the sophistication and the psychological development. And what happens is they become either extremely depressed and turn inward, or extremely aggressive and start showing behavior problems. And either way, you have kids that are heading for very unhappy lives, and it's preventable. That's the important thing to understand. Children can get through traumatic experiences if they have the guidance and the strength of parents who are there for them to help them through it, and let them know that change is a natural part of life, and we're getting through this as a family. But if too many times they become the parents get so weak and they get so emotionally distraught or so filled with rage that all they see is hurting the ex, and the children end up parenting the parents. And that destroys their childhood and gives them a terrible emotional grief. So you have to be empathic and think about your children in every decision you make.
Well, and another thing that you mentioned, Roslyn, just as the kids often feel that, you know, that they might be the ones to blame, and now that we're talking about dating, I mean, if you're dating somebody and that relationship, you know, doesn't last, it doesn't work out, I mean, I can see where the kids might think that it was their fault, it was something they did, you know, like even
exactly.
The kids might have a problem with that person at first, and then they, you know, they realize that, okay, mom likes this person, and, you know, they get along, and, you know, and then something happens, and the relationship, you know, ends. The kids mm-hmm. can often, you know, feel like it's their fault, or in my case, my son blamed it on his sister. Oh, you guys broke up because
exactly.
of his sister and the problems that she had. So, and then the other thing I wanted to mention was a point that you said, the bad mouthing is that, you know, and then venting. So, I mean, it stands to reason that, you know, if you were having difficulties with your ex, that you would vent to the person that you're dating. And so then I think it's very important that we make sure that the person you're dating doesn't badmouth the ex in front of the kids as well.
Absolutely. That's hurtful for the children. Yes. Everything you're saying has to do with the fact that the more you can communicate with your children honestly about things in an age-appropriate manner, but using life situations and using TV shows and movies and things to bring up situations and sharing your thoughts and feelings and asking them about theirs, the better it is, because they learn that they can communicate about what they're feeling. They don't have to hold it in. They could ask you questions, and you could explain it, and that'll help them feel, it'll ease their guilt or shame or sense of blame, because they're internalizing things and you may not be aware. So children who have better communication with their parents and who can dialogue with their parents usually are emotionally much, much better off and have less psychological harm than those that have to keep it in because they can't share anything or trust saying anything to their parents because their parents are in such bad emotional health. So you're doing them a favor when you're working on yourself and sharing with them the important things about taking responsibility for your decisions in life, and letting things go, not holding in anger and resentment, and focusing on love and focusing on being empathic to other people's feelings. I think if parents were more empathic overall and put themselves in little Johnny and little Susie's shoes, they would avoid so many mistakes because they'd see what it's like to experience their parents' world as a 6-year-old or a 16-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, in the last Telesummit series, Patrick McMillan was explaining that he's trained himself to just visualize his kit before he makes any decision. He just puts his mind on the face of his children, and that really helps him center and make a good decision based on what's good for his kids.
Absolutely.
I thought that was a great,
wonderful
idea. Great tool.
Yeah.
And
something
listen, we're almost out of time, but we had one more question come in, and this
mm-hmm.
one's a good one. So aside from the qualities of a partner that you're seeking for yourself, how can you tell if a person is someone who will really care for your children?
Mm. By talking to them and asking questions. You want to ask them about their relationship with their own children, with their ex, with their parents. I think asking questions about how they are with their family and then seeing them with family members as you get to know them better gives you a real sense of who they really are. And some of the other signs that you know you've found a keeper in a relationship is that the person's emotionally available and respectful to you and that he feels like a sincere best friend and that he keeps his agreements dependable and trustworthy and that you're comfortable being yourself with that person. If you have to be someone other than yourself in order to impress a relationship partner, then there's something artificial about that relationship that's not going to last. So it's crucial that you see how your children react and the way he interacts with them, and especially during, you know, conflicting situations. There's going to be times of conflict. There's going to be times when the kids are acting out, and you could just see how he behaves and how he handles himself when they're being bratty or acting out in some way. And those are all signs that you've got someone who has the emotional stability to be a good partner and to be good with your children. And take your time. Don't rush into making relationship commitments. I really think time is on your side to really get to know someone. Sometimes it takes several months before you see another side to a person.
You know, I've always been told that it's really until you know somebody for at least, it's like 12 to 18 months is when they start to really show their true colors. That,
mm-hmm.
you know, once you've gone through 12 months to 18 months of knowing them, I mean, by then you will have seen them through a whole year. You've seen them through different seasons, different holidays, different, you know, you've seen them in all different scenarios
exactly.
by then. But it's they start to get more comfortable. And so, you know, that oftentimes you may not really see who that person is or really have a be able to make a good judgment about them until you've known them for at least a year or year and a half.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's an important factor.
And when you've got kids at stake and what it can do to them, you sure do want to take your time.
Absolutely.
Go ahead, Pam.
Well, I was just going to say that our time is up, and we do want to respect everybody's time. We know that our listeners are really busy single parents. If you enjoyed this call and found it helpful, we've got 6 more coming up for the Telesummit. It does start on Monday, March 12th, same time. If you are not on the mailing list, well, wait, you have to be on the mailing list or you wouldn't be here tonight. Never mind. But you could tell your friends about it. Because the more the merrier on the Divorced Parent Telesummit. Roz, thanks so much for taking time out of your evening to talk with us and let your husband know we appreciate him allowing you to be with us here on this call too.
Always a pleasure.
We've cleared out our questions, so I think we're going to go ahead and sign off.
Can I just say I had a great a free dating tip sheet at womendatingafter40.com and a free divorce and parenting ebook at childcenteredivorce.com.
Well, there you go. Some extra bonuses for our listeners tonight. Okay, thanks again. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Thank you.